Welcome to Theology Simply Profound, a podcast of Reformed Forum. This is episode 225.
What do others think of us? This often is a question that we deal with subconsciously. We walk into a room not caring about what people think, but then someone says something that takes us so off guard that we spend the rest of the evening being bothered by it. Jesus was ridiculed by the most elite, important, wealthy, and respected members of society. They mocked him, plotted against him, tried to trick him, and in the end, falsely had him convicted as a criminal and executed. Did Jesus let these people get to him? Perhaps not, although we really don't know what he felt hour to hour. We know that he seemed to be more bothered when people didn't understand what the Old Testament said about him. He told the Pharisees that they should have known who he was. He rolled his eyes at Nicodemus when he didn't understand the new birth, John the Baptist when he questioned his messiahship, and his disciples when they didn't know the Father even after they had spent 3 years with the Son. I suppose we are more bothered by our family and friends treating us wrongly than with strangers. John Bunyan opens the second of his pilgrim stories, giving us a recap of Christian's flight from the city of destruction and the afterward reactions of his family and friends. The same people who had treated him so badly that he had to leave the city with his finger in his ears. Have the opinions of the people in the city changed towards Christian? What about his wife and children? And how does Bunyan change his own interaction with the story? We will discuss these and other questions today on Theology Simply Profound.
Welcome back to another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Again, I'm Bob Turillo, pastor of Westminster Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Indian Head Park, Illinois. And with me, as always, is Rob McKenzie. Rob's an elder here at Westminster. Hey, Rob, up for another discussion?
Always, yes.
Always.
What do you want to discuss?
I don't know.
Do you want to figure it out?
I don't know. Well, you mentioned something about this pilgrim progress, like Bunyan guy.
I did. But normally we talk about other things. You just want to jump right in.
I don't know what else to talk about. I mean, it's 30 degrees outside.
It was supposed to snow and it didn't.
It did.
Not really.
It snowed last night.
It didn't snow enough. That's
well,
not real snow.
When you have like 12 inches just the week before and, yeah, I don't know, and then, you know, one inch and then some ice doesn't seem to matter much.
That's true.
It is warming up, though. Things are going to melt and it's going to get muddy and it's going to get yucky. I know that.
That's going to happen. You worry about that because you have the beast.
I have a dog.
You put the beast outside.
You put the beast outside. Mm-hmm. She runs around, tears up the grass, brings all the mud inside, and makes for a very difficult day. But that's just me whining, right?
So maybe... That's why I have cats.
That's why you have cats. You have indoor cats. You don't even let them out, right?
No, don't let them out.
Yeah.
They're our prisoners.
That's yes, right. You're like a captive. You can keep the cats captive.
Basically. I consider myself a giant despair. that's how I roll.
Go out and you capture cats and bring them in your house?
That's right.
The cat guy?
Yes. Yeah, two. We have two. Oh, dear. Okay, well, maybe we should just jump in.
Maybe we should.
We talked about last week. We introduced it with Bunyan responding to critics, mm-hmm. But also, you know, you can tell he was very delighted that his story it went all over the world and was translated in languages. And mm-hmm. all these people were coming up to him saying, you know, how wonderful it was. And he was very happy. And he was happy with the way it was helping people. And he had to remedy a few things that had gone on.
Yeah.
First of all, at least three other versions had come out as far as like the sequel. So three other people had written a sequel.
Not by Bunyan.
Other people were taking his work and actually like editing it and putting it out, mm-hmm. Which he was not too happy with.
Not the same kind of copyright laws that we have today.
No, not at all. And, you know, it's if that hadn't happened, this is interesting. If that hadn't happened, I don't know if he would have written a second one.
Mm-hmm.
He might have, but he's definitely responding to what's going out there, that there's these three other, this is the next work of Bunyan's, trying to pretend to be him, versions of the next story out there. He wants to come out and say, no, those aren't me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to write my own. One of them that actually was kind of successful actually uses Christiana and the boys as what's happening in that sequel. And it's written by somebody that hates Calvinism and wants to put out a book that's very Arminian. And
John, do you know if any of those are still around? Like, are they?
I don't know. I looked for them. Those, the one has to be somewhere. I mean, maybe it's just at the British Museum.
Yeah,
I don't know. We talked about that other one that was written. Like a third part three that was written, I think, in the 1800s, mm-hmm. that's said to be John Bunyan, but obviously it probably isn't. That does exist. You can buy that, but not the second ones. And it's funny because I think it was book five of the Harry Potter series that people were really anxious to read the next book, and J.K. Rowling was actually caught up in this lawsuit, which went on for a couple of years, that she would end up winning, and. Someone in Japan wrote like the next book, and
I did not know about this.
Wrote and put it out there, and actually, it did pretty well. Mm. And Harry, it becomes very Japanese, and Harry like goes off with the dragon to, but you know, think of Airbender or Mulan, the Asian kind of themes that you'd find in their literature. Uh-huh. And he had put that in there. And it's just interesting. Now, the person that did this, it wasn't that he wanted to try to fool anyone. Mm-hmm. He just loved the story and he wanted the next one. And so there's a little bit of this with Bunyan where you know, even the versions that are being put out there that he doesn't like, it shows you how popular the book was.
Mm-hmm. Even though it did receive some criticism, we talked about that, right? But popularly... It was popular,
right? This, the critics come out and mm-hmm. it's nothing but medieval romance,
right? Right. That's what you mentioned last time,
and he's saying it's actually not, but but actually it does have some similarity with it. I think it was a genre unto itself. I mean, Bunyan's Hoogland's Progress was so different than anything else. It was very new, but he definitely picks up some themes from what you'd understand in medieval romance, whether he was trying to or not.
Yeah, well, he's a product of his time, you know, and whatever influences that were there, you know, sometimes they just pop in no matter what.
So when the Pilgrim's Progress comes out, you know, he's in jail, and he says that he wandered into a cave, and he lays down, and he sleeps, and he dreamed a dream. And then he's going to tell you about this dream, and that's kind of the premise, how he sets it up. Right. He's going to be, he's the narrator. It's a dream book, and this is how it goes. In fact, we even have that place in Pilgrim's Progress where he had been released from prison. He hadn't finished it because he's writing it for himself. He comes back to prison and says in the book, and I laid back down to dream again, and I continued my dream. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting. And again, it shows you how very personal it was for him. This was more about him. Than anything else. And we talked last week about how that changes. That changes with the second part, because now he's writing for his readers.
Yeah, and he actually begins it that way. Courteous companions, right? I mean, after the answering the objections, right? And he closes actually that introduction with, this is my hearty prayer. But he begins this second part, as he terms it. We've been calling it, you know, the continuation of the journey, or book two is how I put it on the website, at your recommendation.
That's what it is.
It's definitely book length, just looking at it here. And it's a shorter, slightly shorter.
Yeah,
it's not too much shorter, but... he addresses the companions, courteous companions, sometime since, to tell you my dream that I had of Christian the pilgrim, and of his dangerous journey toward the celestial country, was pleasant to me and profitable to you. I told you then also what I saw concerning his wife and children, and so on and so forth. So he's reintroducing certain things very quickly right there at the beginning, but he does it to an audience, as you said last week, to a specific people who were enjoying the walk or the journey on the first book.
Right. And the way he introduces himself is very different than the first book, because he comes in almost like a journalist, where he is saying himself, he doesn't know what's happened after Christian left. He doesn't know what happened in the city. He doesn't know what happened to Christiana and the boys. He doesn't know. So he's going to go and he's going to find out. And that's so different than the first book, because First of all, this tells you that he's concentrating a little bit more on story themes. And because remember the first book, he kept saying, don't worry about the story. The story means nothing. It's all about the allegory. Mm-hmm. And I think that's changed a bit here. He not that he is any way less interested in speaking spiritual truth through allegory. That is definitely his primary goal. But he cares a little more about the story. He's structuring it to be a little bit more like the story.
Yeah, I am curious, and I'm not sure if you have an answer for this, because maybe I'm misreading. Does if this is the same narrator as the first story, why doesn't he know what happens to Pilgrim or to Christian?
Well, I mean, in one sense, he says in the first story, he says, I went to a cave and I dreamed, and this is my dream. So he's telling you what has happened after the dream. He's woken up. Mm-hmm. Now he's writing down the dream. So he knows what's happened. Here, it's really interesting because he says he personally walked into a wood, and he is a mile away from the city.
Referring to Bunyan himself.
Referring to Bunyan. Yes, Bunyan, okay. He walked into a wood. Mm-hmm. He walked toward the city. And when he gets a mile from the city, he then lays down and goes to sleep.
So what you're saying is, and that's one of the biggest differences, right?
Yeah.
And while there are similarities, the differences are what end up being the surprising parts of reading the new book, right? And so you're saying he's mixing or blurring the line between reality and the dream.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Because if he's entering, if the land of Pilgrim's Progress, that world, as I think, and I'm not sure if we talked about it last week, the secondary world that he creates, to use a tokenism, he's entering into that world now. It matters now.
Tokenism?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tolkien talked about how when a writer creates a world, that it's a secondary world.
Sure.
And people that are entering into that world are using secondary belief. And if that world is plausible, it doesn't have to match reality, but it has to be a plausible within its own world. And it has to be something that is naturally entered into. Mm-hmm. And so, see, I think Bunyan does this with Pilgrim's Progress. That people naturally enter into his secondary world that he creates, and when he keeps saying to us, "Stop worrying about the story; it's not about the story." But he is very good at making a secondary world. So he cared about the story that he was writing, or he cared about the ins and outs and the roads and where he's going. And
it has to make sense,
right? Yeah. And
you can make a map as people have done.
You can, and. The one thing about Bunyan is that the secondary world that he creates. I mean, the one thing about his world is that how many hundreds of years later are they still making movies and drawings and books? And why? Because he does such a good job at creating a secondary world. And so here, when he says that he walked into the wood, toward the city, he's a mile from the city. Wait a minute. Now all of a sudden the city of destruction is in our own reality, but then when he sleeps, a man will come to him and wake him up. Is he dreaming or is he not dreaming?
Right. Well, let me just read that section. It's right. What is it? Maybe the second full paragraph as we start. It says, "Now it hath so happened, thorough the multiplicity of business, that I have been much hindered and kept back from my wonted travels into those parts whence he went, and so could not till now obtain an opportunity to make further inquiry after whom he left behind, that I might give you an account of them. But having had some concerns that way of late, I went down again thitherward, now having taken up my lodgings in a wood, about a mile off the place, as I slept, I dreamed again. And as I was in my dream, behold, an aged gentleman came by where I lay, and because he was to go some part of the way that I was traveling, methought I got up and went with him. So as we walked, and as travelers usually do, it was as if we fell into discourse, and our talk happened to be about Christian and his travels. For thus I began with the old man." And then it goes into the conversation, and that's Mr. Sagacity.
Now, I would say that he is saying that that this is a dream, but he's blurring the lines.
Right, because he's, the story, he's a mile away from the city of destruction, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Before he goes to sleep.
Before he goes to sleep, right. So it's like, wait a minute, how's that? Oh, that's new. It's different. Yeah, it's a surprise.
It is.
And that's how some, you know, if people want further reading beyond what we are doing here or listening to something at the Gospel Coalition, Leland Ryken has a commentary of the Pilgrim's Progress as well under the title, to go there real quickly, under the title of Christian Guides to the Classics. And he has a variety of different things that he works on there, but he has one in the Pilgrim's Progress. It's a short commentary, and it's useful. It's also sold on Amazon as an actual book, more like a pamphlet. But he refers to, he's a literary critic, right? He's you know, professor of English. Right. Well, I think he's retired.
Yeah, he's emeritus at Wheaton College.
At Wheaton College, highly respected literary scholar. And he does a wonderful job of bringing out some of the literary aspects of the Pilgrim's Progress that maybe others haven't. And so it's delightful to just sort of see. It's a surprise. He actually uses that language. A surprise, the way in which Bunyan comes into and draws the reader into this aspect of his new book, which he didn't do in the previous one. It's just a simultum of a dream. And it's similar here, but like you said, he blurs the lines of reality, which is kind of cool for a 17th century guy.
Right. Yeah. I think, again, it shows you how much he is interested in constructing a story. Mm-hmm. And not just writing about the spiritual allegory that is important, is the most important thing to him, but he also cares about the story. And I think he cared about the story in the first one, even though he kept saying, don't worry about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and in doing that, though, I mean, at the time, he probably didn't know how significant his book might be.
No.
Right?
Of course not.
And because, like you said, it was for himself, and he was really dealing with spiritual matters for himself to encourage himself and to, you know, get through the times he was in prison. And so now, while he did create a world, and now he's really interested in both in a more explicit way, as you said.
I think it shows you also how he's reacting to the popularity and how other people have entered into the secondary world. And because they're coming up to him talking about Giant Despair and, you know, Doubting Castle and the City of Destruction. And they're talking about these as real places.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if this is accurate or not, but could it be the case that a lot of people, when thinking about the allegory and the story, try to find themselves in it? In the story,
sure. Oh, yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And what he might be saying is, don't worry about that story. Worry about the spiritual parts and find yourself related to the spiritual aspects of it instead of where you are. Because that's my story, right? That's my Christian life. That's what happened to me. That's my story.
Yes.
Now, you can find your identity or you can identify with aspects of the spiritual part of that, but really the chronology, the lineage, or whatever is going on in Pilgrim's Progress, that's me. Mm-hmm. It's going to be different for you. And that shows itself in the second part because it is different, right? Things work themselves out differently. There is connection, but it's different. You're not going to identify strictly with the storyline, but you will identify yourself with, as a Christian, you'll identify with the spiritual storyline, so to speak. I don't know.
I think that's definitely a big part of it. Well, he wrote the first book, you know, as we said, in prison and all that. He comes out, and it's after he's done writing it, after he's out of prison for the second time, he then starts to think, maybe I should publish this. And he gives it to some of his friends, and half his friends say, yes, publish it, and half of them say, no, don't.
Right.
And so I'm sure that probably as he was preparing it for publication, that's probably where he kind of edited in the, look, don't worry about the story. And so you know, there might have been a little self-consciousness going on because he did write it originally for himself. Mm-hmm. But when he comes into this one, he is writing it as a pastor to his church. And he's going to deal with problems that pastors have to deal with their parishioners. Mm-hmm. And this is not going to be his story in any way because this is talking about Christiana. Christian has died. His widow and now fatherless children are what's going to happen to them. So this is definitely not going to be Bunyan's story.
Absolutely. But he knows widows.
right.
who are having to bring up children. Mm-hmm. And so you do get a fuller sense of the maybe the family or right. different troubles that come to someone, a single parent bringing up right. children and walking them through the Christian life and those trials.
Right. And in one sense, he could have looked at his own wife who was raising the children while he was in jail for so many years.
That's very true. I mean, so there could be some personal identification with the challenges she had, mm-hmm. But without, you know, without it being actually very specific to her. Okay, so trying to get ourselves moving along here into the story a bit and some of the ways in which Bunyan might be influenced by other things. He mentions this wood. I mean, is there any significance to yeah. him? So he right. I just read this passage, mm-hmm. and he says he's a mile. He takes up his lodging about a mile away in a wood, off a mile of the place. As I slept in the dream. Is there anything going on?
I think this is a significant, from a literary standpoint, there's a significance with him going into a wood. Whether or how much of what I'm going to pull from this Bunyan actually had in mind. Mm-hmm.
So you're admitting you might be reading into it.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, all right.
Absolutely.
Okay, but when we look at
the history of fairy tale and we look at or fairy story and we look at the history of those writings, we always see like magical fairy things happening in woods. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason is because the woods were unexplored. They were very mysterious to the people
at these times.
Right. You go into so look at the fairy tales. Mm-hmm. Little Red Riding Hood goes into the wood to grandma's house and bad things happen. Hansel and Greta are sent into the woods and they encounter the witch. Snow White goes into the wood and she finds mm-hmm. So there's all this going into the woods and people enter into what's called the land of fairy. They enter into it where they don't realize it. It's normally either in the wood or right on the border, mm-hmm. right on the border. And it's because that natural world was so mysterious to the people at that time. And I think even to us today, you go at dusk. Mm-hmm. To a wood, like we have a lot of forest preserves around here. You go to right. dusk at that time and you're alone and you're looking into the wood.
There's a spookiness to it.
There's a spookiness to it, right.
Especially where there are a lot of oak trees.
Yeah.
And in the fall and winter.
That's,
because they are spooky.
Okay. I did not know you were afraid of oak trees.
They are the, let me just say this. Okay. This is something of an aside. I grew up in a land where there weren't as many oak trees as this.
Okay.
They're mostly maples, right? And they look completely different they don't have trees, leaves on them. Right. And so we came here in the summer, plenty of leaves on the trees, and they look all pretty and everything. And then as soon as fall came and they start coming off, you start noticing they're all gnarly. They're all
love that. Yeah.
They are the epitome of the scary trees you see in dark movies.
Like Wizard of Oz when they start throwing apples.
Yeah. It's kind of spooky.
Well, that's the thing. And so where did, especially in medieval, later, mm-hmm. Renaissance times, where did the sprites live? Where did the fairies live? Mm-hmm. Where did, they lived in the woods mm-hmm. and hobgoblins and trolls. Mm-hmm. You go into the woods and you go over a bridge and there's a troll under it. I mean, that's just the way it's being looked at.
But you're not saying that here it's spooky, but it's something that mysterious happens.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, and that's where you enter into the other world.
Not just,
you understand, it's not like you're entering into the natural world where you're the most natural. Mm-hmm. You are actually the intruder.
You're the foreigner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so when he says that he enters into a wood, to me, that's
it's signaling.
It's a
something.
Literary device that we see in stories. Now, is he just copying the idea that would be very common, such as opening up a story that says,
"Once upon a time," yeah.
right? Or and they all lived happily ever after. The literary devices that are commonly used. So with him entering into the wood and then going toward the city of destruction and then going into a dream and then.
Right. So he's going towards the city of destruction. He's in the wood about a mile off, and it's at that point that he falls asleep and he goes into dream. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And so I just think that mm-hmm. there's a connection of his work to a larger genre mm-hmm. of fairy tales. And when I say fairy tale, and I'm looking at it as a much broader.
Arthurian
legends, right. Robin Hood. And what happens with Arthur? Mm-hmm. And now normally, again, I said usually people enter into the world of fairy when they're barely expecting it. But you have like Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. Fairy comes to them, the Green Knight. He's a fairy. Mm-hmm. That is who he is. And don't think Tinkerbell, think Elrond. And he comes in, and so there's the fairy breaking into our world. Mm-hmm. That's not the norm. Normally, it's what happens when King Arthur and his knights go out looking for the Holy Grail. They all end up in certain places. They all end up going through woods, and then strange things happen to them, mm-hmm. because they wander into that magical world. So this is a larger genre than just a Snow White and
then Tinkerbell. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what most people think of when they think of fairies, is little
that is. And that's actually, unfortunately, a creation of, kind of goes back to Shakespeare, actually.
Mm-hmm. Did he ruin it?
He kind of did. Now, Shakespeare was before Bunyan. So, yeah. But, well, you know, we're taking Bunyan into where he's not trying to go at all.
Yeah.
But, Shakespeare came out there where he talks about A Midsummer Night's Dream, where he talks about like Puck, mm-hmm. These fairies hiding behind blades of grass, mm-hmm. and things like that. It's like, mm-hmm. yeah. And so, but although even Shakespeare had a much broader understanding of the idea of fairies, mm-hmm. it really did get to Disney when Disney kind of took what had already been developing and then, now we get Tinkerbell.
And I mean, now we have the Tooth Fairy and we have the Rock, who is the Tooth Fairy.
That's true. Although if you look back at the history of the mythology of the Tooth Fairy, uh-huh. very dark.
Pretty, I'm sure it very has got to be.
I mean, it is not.
I don't know that history, but I can, now that you mention it, I can only imagine.
Yeah, you know, it's in the same kind of genre as werewolves and vampires and silkies and things like that. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying that because part of we're going to get more into the actual spiritual allegories he's doing, but I think it's really important that, first of all, I think it's really important that Bunyan's works gets a new look at his literary devices and as literature, mm-hmm. and what he was doing and how it fits within the history of literature and mm-hmm. The genre and that. While not trying to get away from its main purpose, which is Christian allegory. But I just, that's why I'm emphasizing this in the first couple episodes that they're, let's not overlook the literary genius actually of Bunyan. So I mean, let's start to get into that story now.
Of course.
So, who is Mr. Sagacity?
Well, he's the first person that Bunyan meets. He's in his dream and he says, let me just write to me, sir, said I, what town is that there below? All right. So now, interesting, we get to Sagacity. He's in his dream, but he can see the town that he just walked to a mile ago. So there's that blurring of the line.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's very interesting.
It is.
So Bunyan asks, and then we learn that it is Mr. Sagacity. And so obviously his name comes from sage. And so he's a wise man of some sort. Right. And, sagacity, is the way in which Bunyan in his dream comes to learn about, what has happened to Christian, what has happened to, his, wife and kids. He learns that it's the city of destruction a mile away. So you have this figure that comes in with wisdom, and that's who this Mr. Sagacity is. He comes in and he has the ability to tell and essentially lead us into the story of Christiana and her four sons, and another figure that will come into it as well, and sort of gets the ball rolling for Bunyan, and then he's the one who sort of gets things started for the whole storyline. Yeah,
well, it's interesting because it's almost as if, again, he's going to tell Bunyan, or the narrator, this dreamer, all these things that have already happened. Like, it's already happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
That's right.
You almost think. I mean, I remember when I was first starting to read it. It was, is he going to talk about everything that led up to prior of them leaving? Mm-hmm. But no, he's already, because he already mentions that they're, you know, they packed up and left. And it's interesting that who, where did this guy come from that he meets the dreamer and how he's going to tell him everything about, you know, how does he just show up? And from the story perspective, but I think this kind of goes back to where Bunyan was. All these people kept asking him, what happened to Christian's wife? And, what happened? Mm-hmm. And then he says, yeah, I've been wanting to find out for a long time, but business has kept me from finding out.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like he's keeping an actual timetable mm-hmm. within reality mm-hmm. and within story.
Yeah. It's kind of brilliant.
It is. It really is.
Because it does keep you interested in what's going on.
Yeah.
He says sagacity, just to give description mm-hmm. Of what's going on here, he says, with regard to Christian, to essentially just, he recapitulates the story, right? I mean, but very briefly, he says it this way. He says, hear of him? Aye. And I also heard of the molestations, the troubles, wars, captivities, cries, groans, frights, and fears that he met with and had in his journey. Besides, I must tell you, all of our country rings of him. There are but few houses that have heard of him and his doings, but have sought after and got the records of his pilgrimage. Yea, I think I may say that his hazardous journey has got a many well-wishers to his ways. For though when he was here, he was a fool in every man's mouth, yet now he is gone, he is highly commended of all. For 'tis said he lives bravely where he is, yea, many of them that are resolved never to run his hazards, yet have their mouths water at his gains. Okay, so sagacity is a man that meets Bunyan in his dream and is able to say that everyone, for most everyone, yeah. has heard, they've gotten the records. I mean, what is right. this, like Fox's Book of Martyrs or something? Yeah.
I don't know. They went to the City of Destruction Town Hall.
Yeah. I mean, somehow, right? I mean, he's telling us that Christian's journey, maybe the book, has come to be in the hands of people in the City of Destruction so that they could read of it.
Right.
So maybe he's talking about the first book there. They've gotten the records.
Well, yeah.
And he's looking at they're reading Pilgrim's Progress, the first, right, the records of his journey, and they're reading it through it, and they're like, hey, oh my goodness, look at what happened to him. And it's transforming their lives such that they want out, or at least. And we go to here because they now think he's no longer a fool, right? Yeah. Many are converted almost, it seems, in the City of Destruction, yeah. and they're maybe seeking to leave. We know Christiana does because the story continues. Right. But
and we know Faithful did. Faithful left.
Yes.
So, that again, there's that connectivity that he's making between the two
Seeker
stories.
Sorry.
We'll get to that another time. But so there, it's interesting. This is kind of why I did my opening the way I did, where the idea of being ridiculed and that Christian had a really hard time of it, and he ends up leaving, and there, he's being ridiculed. They're also saying, "Don't go, come back." And he puts his fingers in his ears and he runs out the gate and down the road toward the Wicked Gate. And all these people, what happened with Pliable, comes out and he goes back, and everybody just mm-hmm. looks at Christian as a fool.
All right, they jeer at him. Yeah.
And now mm-hmm. they heard all the tales of everything that happened to him mm-hmm. have come back, and they know that he went to the city of the Celestial City. He made it all the way there, and they keep hearing all these things like he's at the high court now. He's a member of court. He's friends with the king. They walk and talk every day. And mm-hmm. Look at what great rewards Christian has gotten. And everybody's like, oh, mm-hmm. boy, that Christian.
Yeah. I mean, the description is he has a chain of gold about his neck, that he has a crown of gold beset with pearls upon his head. Others say that the shining ones that sometimes showed themselves to him in his journey are become his companions, and that he is as familiar with them in the place where he is as here one neighbor is with another. Besides, 'tis confidently affirmed concerning him that the king of the place where he is has bestowed upon him already a very rich and pleasant dwelling at court, and that he every day eateth and drinketh and walketh and talketh with him and receiveth of the smiles and favors of him that is judge of all there. Moreover, it is expected of some that his prince, the lord of the country, will shortly come into these parts, and will know that reason, if they can give any, why his neighbors set so little by him, and had him so much in derision when they perceived that he would be a pilgrim. For they say that now he is so in the affections of his prince that his sovereign is so much concerned with the indignities that was set upon Christian when he became a pilgrim, that he will look upon all as if done unto himself, and no marvel, for 'twas for the love that he had to his prince that he ventured as he did. That's interesting. He's bringing in some language, obviously biblical language, with regard to what Christians receive when they come into glory with Christ. But also, those that did these things unto Christian is as though they did unto the prince himself, right? I mean, right out of Matthew, I think 25, and the language of, you know, you do this unto the least of mine, you do it unto me. Right. It's just remarkable the way that Bunyan puts this in there and applies it to the people of the city of destruction. And then, you know, for all we know, some of these people are, as you said earlier, they're hearing this. They have received this record. It's awesome. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it really is excellent the way he weaves that in. He talks about the city of destruction, and at one point he says that it's that he has walked through that city before. And it's interesting. It's just that Bunyan throws that in there. It makes me think that either he's talking about his own conversion, or he's talking about the first book, or both,
or both. Right. Because they you know, now he's blurring reality and fiction.
Right. So it's he's just a brilliant writer. Right. But so going back to my opening again, you know, that we as Christians, we will be oppressed. We will have persecution brought upon us. Some in great forms are thrown in prison or killed. Others, the little subtleties that you might get from people just laughing at you because maybe you pray or go to church or things like that. But all these things, as you said, all these things that are done to us are being done to Christ, and we will stand one day with him at the final judgment, and there will be vindication, and there will be nobody who has ever done anything against a Christian that is not converted that will be able to sit there and be able to do it again. They will only be kneeling to their judge and king.
Yeah, I mean, and what you're trying to get at there is that any form of ridicule that we might receive now, right, that we find ourselves concerned about, and trouble our hearts, and make us question things about our walk, our faith, where there might be some valid things, right? We are sinners, and we need to be humbled by things like that. But at the same time, they're invalid. There's just plain, you know, plain out mean people doing mean things to other people that we are sometimes on the end of. And you're saying essentially, listen, Christian in the story, he had to turn his heart away from that. He had to turn his face towards Christ and make the walk, and go on the journey, no matter what the ridicule was. Stuck his fingers in his ears in order to do that. Essentially saying, listen, I'm not going to be so bothered by it that I won't do this walk. I need to follow Christ. I need to go on this journey. This is what I must do, no matter the cost.
Right. Yeah. And of course, for Christian, I'm sure the most hurtful would have been that his wife and children,
absolutely,
who thought he was insane, were, you know, they wanted him to sleep it off, and it didn't work. And he got to the point where he kept witnessing to them. And then finally, he just stopped because they just didn't want to hear it. And so he stopped talking to them about these things. And that's when he finally made the decision that he had to leave.
I mean, and that's pastorally speaking, that's, you know, the thing when you have mixed marriages, we might say, right, where either a Christian marries an unbeliever, which they ought not to do, but they do, and they find those troubles, right? Or when there's an unbelieving couple, and then one of them becomes a Christian, and you have the challenges that come about and the conversations that take place. And sometimes, you know, there's toleration. But other times there's just outright hostility that comes about. And it appears that, you know, Christian just couldn't, or Christian needed to be on. They weren't listening to anything he would say. And so you stop chatting about it, as you said. I mean, that's a viable option, right? In order to keep, you know, peace, so to speak.
Right.
In a
Well, there's only so many times you can give the gospel to the same person without them hating you.
Yeah, and, I mean, and Jesus even says, anymore. You know, you can leave that town and, you know, right. wipe the dust off your feet.
Yeah.
That's what happens sometimes. And sometimes you need to do that.
Yeah. So this is really interesting, the way that Bunyan brings himself into the story, brings us in, the way he brings us into the story as well, because that's what he's doing. I mean, he's bringing us along.
Yeah.
And so it's giving us that aftermath of when Christian had left, and what has happened with the townspeople, what has happened with his family. It kind of, you know, sews it up. It gives us that the finality. You wonder if there weren't a lot of people who really needed that, you know, that he knew, that mm-hmm. that are like, you know, we just want to know what did the town, did they ever hear about him? Did they ever? These are questions that he was able to answer really in a few short paragraphs.
Yeah, well, it's a very brilliant way of. It's a brilliant way of just summarizing, but at the very same time that you're summarizing, you're introducing new things that answer questions that people had at the end of the last book.
Right.
Or, and then, I mean, he just, from there, just moves us right into Christiana and the Four Sons, which is pretty cool. Yeah, it's just really, really well done.
Which we will get to next week.
Well,
we will.
Well, I guess that's it for this episode of Theology Simply Profound. Thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode. Of course, we are a podcast of the Reform Forum, and you can check us out and all the other resources at reformedforum.org. And questions, comments about this particular episode or any of our episodes, do write us at mail@reformforum.org. Or as well, you can check out the congregation that Rob and I serve at westminsteropc.org, and for other OPCs in the Chicagoland area, chicagoreform.org. And Rob, you already hinted at it, of course, but what are we tackling next time?
Well, we'll see if we can't get Christiana and her crew to the Wicket Gate.
Okay. Again, thanks for taking the time. Again, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Until next time.